VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 435, recorded on August 22nd, 2016. Edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 268th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Benzer.
And I am Seth Dirk.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. And oh, by the way, he's not on today, but today is Paul S. Novak's birthday.
Oh, well, happy birthday, Paul, if you're listening.
Yeah. I won't say what his age is, just he isn't as young as he claims to be. So, anyway, we're going to start off with, what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing the second story of the Trials of, or the Legend of Heroes Trials in the Sky game, and it's getting good, you know, a great story.
Is there less brother-sister incest in it?
Huh?
Is there less brother-sister incest in it?
It's they're not blood
They're not
related.
Biologically brother and sister, but they grew up together. It's like...
Yeah.
It's like Bobby and Cindy having sex, having a romance. It's like Bobby and Cindy having a romance. You know, they're not biologically brother and sister, but
they only lived together for like 5 years, starting at about 10 years old. So it's a complicated relationship, I guess.
Oh wait a minute, who's the middle one? I know Greg was the oldest and Bobby was the youngest. Who was the middle kid?
What are you talking about?
The Brady Bunch.
Oh, yeah.
Greg and Bobby. Who was the middle one?
Greg.
Greg
Mike,
was the oldest.
I think.
Mike. So it's like Mike and Marsha having a relationship. So, anyway. Yeah. But, anyways, so last we saw, the first game ended on a cliffhanger. We won't say what because we don't want to spoil this game for people. Does that get resolved at all in the opening, or does it keep hanging around?
Well, she makes a decision on, you know, what to do, so I guess in a way it's resolved, or she's resolved to do something about it, so she's doing something about it, but, you know, it hasn't, I guess, gotten to that point yet. Later in the game it's going to happen, though.
Right.
You just have to get there.
Have you played anything else aside from...
Yeah, Minecraft.
Okay. That's a given.
Yeah.
Although, actually, from what I understand, there's been some doings in the past 2 weeks of Minecraft. Something special. I'm trying to remember. It wasn't a patch, was it? No.
They're, Jeb has been releasing tweets on features that it's going to be introduced, like you're going to be able to make a map in the end.
Right.
They're reintroducing the green robed villager who was just... Like in, he was a dormant villager because they had nothing for him to do. So we're thinking that when 1.11 comes out, there'll be something for him to trade. I don't know if he'll be like an alchemist or something trading potions or some other thing that they introduce in 1.11 to have him trade.
Right. How about you, TJ? What have you been playing?
I've been doing quite a few things since we've had 2 weeks since the last episode.
Right. Oh, by the way, I have to explain about the last 2 weeks. Last week I had a severe case of laryngitis, so I was not able... I still have a touch of laryngitis, but I can't speak now, at least a little bit.
I was worried about you. It sounds like laryngitis is no joke.
No. I still can't sing well, so... I hate it when laryngitis forces you to be off-key. It's like, oh, no, don't do that to me.
Well, I'm glad you're back on track. At least in
the
talking
part.
Terms.
For the most part.
Yeah. So, biggest one, I guess, is I played No Man's Sky.
Yeah, and, let's discuss that later.
Yeah, we'll touch on
that's,
that
later. That's the first item on the list, of, I believe. No, it's on our docket. It's on our docket, so we'll be discussing No Man's Sky.
More recently, The Titanfall 2 tech demo was this last weekend.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I was playing with that.
You know what? Had you noticed in that trailer for the single player campaign that Titan sounds... It isn't, but it sounds a lot like Peter Cullen. Are they trying to make us think, oh, we're going to be with Optimus Prime? Because have you noticed? It sounds almost exactly... It's like they have an impersonator doing Peter Cullen.
It's interesting, because I will say from the tech demo, there's different voices depending on what Titan you're in.
I would just say, you know, if you're gonna emulate Peter Cullen, just get Peter Cullen. How much could he possibly cost? I look at his IMDb thing, and all it shows is Optimus Prime. He's done almost nothing else. So why not have him come in and do the voice for one of the mechs? I mean, don't you think people, kids, gamers would get a nerdgasm over that?
Yeah. I will say this, and this is a sneak peek at my thoughts on No Man's Sky. I like that the AI in the Titans only talks to you when it's really important.
But they tell us about the grappling hook.
Oh, dude, it's great. Like, there's so much mobility in Titanfall 2 that they made a big point to focus on upping the mobility. You had the wall run from the first game,
but they
added a sliding aspect, and you use, like, jumping and sliding to boost your mobility.
Right, people were talking about doing jump slide, grappling hook. Jump slide, grappling hook.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of crazy or ridiculous, but the grappling hook, it doesn't boost you exactly towards...
Right, it's not Lost Just Cause 3. It doesn't propel you anywhere.
It moves you based on the momentum that you have going at the time,
so
which could be going forward, or you could fire it at the side and, like, swing around a tree.
Right. I was about to say, conceivably, you could swing around a corner like Spider-Man, and you could also fire it into people. They won't bring them to you, but it'll make you go to them and make it a nice little melee kill. Just stick it into them, and just you're drawn to them, and you just stick them with your. There's also a lot of new assassinations, too.
Uh-huh.
And also, they made it a lot easier to rodeo a Titan. Although, I'm pretty sure there's going to be some counters against that.
Right. And I'll get to that, actually. Like, one of the biggest changes that I saw in that game... In the first game, you had three basic Titans that covered your heavy, your medium, and your light.
Yeah.
And the new Titan in Titanfall 2, they took those three categories and broke them up into what is eventually going to be six Titans that all have very specific and different capabilities.
Right.
The two that we saw in the tech demo were Ion and Scorch, and Ion has a lot of energy-based weaponry, laser cannons, energy-based shield, and this massive, like, energy beam that can, like... It's basically like a super beam that incinerates everything in front of it.
Let's guess what Scorch does.
Scorch is fire-based. And he has, like, a grenade launcher. He has a gas grenade that if you fire anything that is explosive into it, it makes a giant burst of fire through the area. And the difference between them is that Ion is very precision-based, and Scorch is really good at hitting just everything in front of him.
Yeah,
but
just
for
area,
left,
of
but
area of attack.
Yep.
That reminds me of the t-shirt that's being sold from Nerdist, I think it is, which has a wizard on it, and he says, it's called an area of attack damage, fool, just stay out of the way. It's called splash damage, that's right. It's called splash damage, stay out of the way.
One that we didn't see that's been presented, but it wasn't in the tech demo, was Ronin. And Ronin is he's basically a light Titan. He has a sword.
I was about to say, it sounds like he's going to have a sword.
Yep. And he's very mobility based, very made for getting in close and just wreaking havoc. Very quick.
Right.
But we didn't see that in the tech demo. That may be... They're having another tech demo, and I think either this weekend or the weekend after.
Right. So, pilots attacking Titans now, rodeoing them, they actually have different mechanics. For now, I believe, you pull out their battery, and you stick a grenade in there, and then you can give that battery to another mech to buff it.
Yeah, the first time you radio a Titan, you take out the battery, and that does damage.
Yeah, it does a segment of damage. It takes a sliver of damage off it. Like a like a lot.
Every time you jump a Titan that doesn't have a battery, then you start throwing grenades into it, into right. that hole where the battery was. And yes, that's an extremely cool part of it, is that you can help out your Titans by taking that battery, rodeoing your own Titans and loading it into them, which gives them a health boost and boosts their combat capabilities for a bit.
Of course, those batteries are extremely fragile. If anything even touches them, they pop.
So. Well, more likely, if you die, it falls down on the map, and either the person that dropped it can go pick it up.
I thought it was. It would explode.
What I saw in the demo was that it just drops where you die, and so the person that you stole the battery from can jump out of their Titan and come pick it up, or somebody else can come grab it. They remain on the field for most of the for a long time, from what I saw.
Yeah. Something I heard about the maps that we're using, they were less vertical than previous Titanfall maps.
That's kind of crazy. I didn't get that at all. Like in
well, they weren't. You see, here's the thing. In Titanfall, it was very vertical. In Titanfall 2, I'm hearing it's less vertical. I mean, you still have going up and, you know, going on sides of buildings and all that, but it isn't as stressed as it is. At least the map that they were showing off wasn't as vertical.
Boomtown isn't as vertical, but the other one has a giant tower in the middle of it, like an enormous tower. And so, I don't know. I don't think I'd say that.
Who cares about a tower unless it collapses? That, if you can have destructibility, make that tower collapse.
I didn't see destructibility on display in that.
No, it's not Battlefield. That's not its game.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, the Battlefield 1 hype train is starting to really start. Have you seen a lot of the new stuff that EA is putting out about Battlefield 1?
I saw the Gamescom trailer and all the information that came out after.
Yeah, they showed off more of the horses. They showed off more of the weaponry. They showed off the melee attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Because, of course, you know, in World War I, they had Scottish broadswords.
We got to look at the elite classes as well. The flame soldier, the walking tank, and the tank killer.
Yeah, I mean, well, that part is just a steampunk. Taken directly from Scythe, I might say. Have you ever heard of the board game Scythe?
I have not.
Okay, it's a board game that takes place after World War I and has mechs.
Hmm.
So, and it's one of the most popular board games right now. It's also one of the more expensive ones. I did the Kickstarter, and I did it for $100 because I wanted the metal coins, and I wanted the realistic resources. You know, the wood looks like wood, etc., etc., etc.
Is that still in Kickstarter, or is it out now?
No, it's out. That Kickstarter ended like a year and a half ago, and it's done by Stegmeier Games, so it's extremely high quality. When you see Stegmeier attached to it, you can say, yeah, that it's actually, I don't know if this is true, but it's almost co-developed by Board Game Geek. At least he's selling some of the extra stuff on Board Game Geek. So.
Mm-hmm.
But I swear, you check out Scythe, it is the coolest game you will see in many a moon.
Hmm.
But it has mechs. I didn't know that Battlefield 1... I didn't see the Battlefield 1 mechs.
There are no... Tanks? It's not so much mechs, is that the walking tank is a guy that's in lots and lots of armor and has a minigun.
Okay.
It's a sort of, like, metaphorical tank.
Yeah, you know, that reminds me of the Kinect game I forgot the name of it all of a sudden. I was about to say it, and I forgot it. But, you know, it makes me sad because that what could have been... Because that one featured World War II with tanks that were walking because computers didn't exist or something like that.
I gotta say, I know this has very little to do with the game, but I really dug the Johnny Cash remix that they put in that trailer.
Oh, okay.
you
know, there's a lot of stuff at Gamescom that's going on right now, and I just have to ignore it. But there is some indie developers actually paid to have a Half-Life 3 banner hanging from Gamescom.
Oh yeah.
Talk about trolling on a massive level.
Yeah.
So, as for me, I've been playing a lot of a free-to-play poker game on the Xbox One called Persistence Poker. And here's the thing. Prudence Poker. Oh, fuck. You know, Hold on while I get... I know it's an alliterative name. And it's by 505 Games. Prominent Smoker, that's right. And it's like you have the characters from Brink playing poker, because all of them are customizable. And the thing is, it's dry as dust, and it's a lot of microtransactions to get more chips and, you know, to do all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But I will say this, it's sort of like a Zen-like experience. I mean, when I'm playing, the players who are playing, it isn't like the Texas Hold'em or XBLA game. This game, everybody seems to know how to play poker, which enhances the experience. I mean, there's a single-player part of it, but it's not that interesting. So when I'm playing all these other players, you know, I learn, you know, oh, that guy has a huge pile of chips, I'm going to avoid it because they're just going to drain me without actually having to do anything, you know. So you have to be careful about who you play against. But I don't see anybody just going all in on one hand, you know, all in like a kid. No, they bide their time.
I will say this. I get that Zen quality about it. Like, right off the top of my head, I think of Red Dead Redemption's poker. Yeah. And that was like, I think of that as like, you're on the trail, you're doing all sorts of crazy stuff, then you step into a saloon and play some poker, and that actually felt relaxing.
But here's the thing, you know, I'd go on at 1 o'clock, just because I have nothing better to do, and just play like half an hour of poker, earn some chips so I can earn some other things. I just earned, with my affiliation, one of those long cigarette holders. And what happens is, during the game, it buffs you, your rep. You know, you get rep for everything you do, which levels you up. And when you have one of those items, it gives a percentage added to that rep. So sometimes my guy will go down, pick it up, and take a puff of smoke, and then put it back again. You know? There's some animations that you can have your character do, but there's also animations that they'll do themselves. And it really has a lot of personality. I mean, a lot of people have the tourist outfits on because, you know, they're still new. I have a brown suit with a brown hat and green sunglasses and emerald earrings. So, you know, I'm starting to have a unique look. And there's just something about... It's just, like I said, it's just a very Zen-like game. And it's not the most exciting game in the world, but it is a rewarding poker experience. So,
yeah. I'm guessing you can't...
Go ahead.
I'm guessing you can't get the cheater suit from Red Dead Redemption that
lets you
have a card in your sleeve.
You can't cheat. I will say this, though. It does allow you to decide whether to show... If you bluffed everybody, it allows you the option to show which cards or any cards that you had, or just throw them back face down so they wonder what the hell I put.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he bluffed us, maybe he didn't. You know, that sort of thing. Most satisfying experience in the game is I actually got four of a kind of aces. And I just slowly rode that pot up because some fool thought they were going to get a full house. No. Sorry, four of a kind beats a full house. I win.
That is devastating.
Yeah.
I've been on the receiving end of that, and I've been on the sending end of that.
Oh, and then there was another one in which the hand was close, but my cards were a pair of kings and his was a pair of queens. That must have been infuriating for him.
Yeah.
Anyways. So, I played that, and of course, I'm anxiously waiting tonight to play Deus Ex Humanity Divided. And I learned something about it that was much like the first Deus Ex, in that everything you do, characters will comment on, even if you didn't think they would comment on it. You know? Yeah. If you take the stealth route and knock out every single person when they really wanted you to ghost, they said, well, you left a trail of bodies. I didn't kill anybody. Yeah, but you left a trail of bodies.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. So I'm really looking forward to that.
That sounds really cool, and I like I like what I've been hearing about it. I'm on the fence about it right now, and I'll probably wait to hear what you say, because...
Well, there's no boss battles at all.
That's great. Well, wait.
None.
There really aren't? I thought there were.
No, there aren't.
Sounds fantastic, because that's exactly what I...
The thing is that the one slight complaint I have, and I don't know if it's that big a complaint, is that most of the game, like 80% of the game, takes place in Prague. So you don't have that world-spanning thing that you do in the other Deus Ex games, which is fine with me. I mean, you know, it may make the world feel a little bit smaller, but they're telling a story, and it's an apartheid allegory. So obviously you're going to be staying in the same location for a long time. But the plus side of that is I guess you get to learn this. One thing I hate about Deus Ex Human Revolution is I still get lost in Detroit, and I still get lost in Beijing. The map design was terrible.
But I've also heard that Prague is like the size of most of the maps in Human Revolution put together.
Yeah, well, but here's the thing. At least when you have one single city that you're worrying about, you'll learn that city and you'll learn the characters in it.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, you know, a couple of 2 hours from, or I don't know if they're going to do it on midnight PST or midnight EST. Probably PST, which will piss me the hell off because that means 3 a.m. in the morning.
But Human Revolution had one aspect that made me stop playing the game altogether, and that was the boss battles, so I'm glad that they're gone, because I had a non-lethal talkie character, and when you get to the boss battles, guess what? Non-lethal doesn't work, talking doesn't work, you have to fight them.
For Barrett, what I had to do was, before the patch came in and they fixed the boss battles, is I would just throw those canisters at him and make him explode, and just kept on doing it until he died.
It pissed me off so badly that I quit the game. I beat Barrett, but I was so salty about it afterwards.
A lot of people were, see things, my guy was non-lethal, so I was forced to kill somebody, and I didn't want to kill somebody because I was doing a pacifist run.
Exactly.
So, we'll see. I hear that the conversations are also a lot more nuanced, too. So, like I said, next week we'll discuss Deus Ex Mankind Divided. Like I said, I didn't see any of the reviews yet because I don't want to spoil it, but I did listen to them discuss it on the Rebel FM podcast. And there was a lot of things they talked about that which I liked, so I went ahead and pre-ordered it. And when you pre-order it, you get a bunch of items. I did not pre-order the season pass, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not bothering with the season pass. I mean, even though the season pass will have single player missions, I'm not going to deal with it until like 2 years after I've played it. Because Deus Ex, you know, unlike, say, Mass Effect, single player campaigns, like Citadel and Omega and all that stuff, they actually have meat to the story, and they add to the story. I don't see how single player DLC, campaign DLC, will add anything to Deus Ex. It's not that kind of game.
Yeah.
Because you don't have party members. To explore the stories of.
And that was like with the Deus Ex Human Revolution DLC, it was sort of like just an addendum. It wasn't really something that added to the story so much as it was just a little bit of just an extra separate thing that you could do. It didn't build upon the world that you already explored.
And I'm pretty sure that they're not going to have four buttons to press at the end. Pick your ending. Push one of these four buttons. Anyways. I know Scott's been silent because he doesn't play Deus Ex. Scott, you there?
Yeah, and none of the games... I don't have anything to say about those games. So
that's okay. I mean, number two and number three, you'll have probably plenty of things to say. But for number one, do you play Mass Effect, Scott?
I'm looking forward to the release of Nuka World tomorrow, actually.
Oh, yeah.
That's coming out, so I'll be able to play that.
Yeah. Well, like I said, next week we'll have plenty to say about a lot of new stuff that's coming out. There was actually a lot of information doled out about Nuka World 2, but some of it was spoilerish, so I won't be discussing it. And here's the thing, I haven't bought any of the DLC for Fallout 4. Not a single thing. And it isn't because I passed on the season pass when it was only $30, but I don't know. I mean, I bought all the DLC for Fallout 3. I didn't buy any DLC for Fallout New Vegas, even though the DLC for Fallout New Vegas is supposed to be really, really good, like Honest Hearts and all that stuff.
Yeah. I feel like some of this DLC would have been better had it been released in the beginning, kind of like the Build Your Own Vault thing, because being like with pretty much the whole game done, I don't really feel like building a vault. It had it been in the beginning, like right as soon as you get out of Vault 111 and they say, hey, you want to rebuild it? That would have been an actually really interesting thing to do. But instead, you're just doing all the settlements. And,
well, but what about Far Harbor?
Hmm?
What about Far Harbor? I'm pretty sure you enjoyed that.
Oh, yeah, I did enjoy Far Harbor, yes. That was fun. That was fine.
That was a huge chunk added to the game, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. It was. It's about how large 10, is Nuka World supposed to be?
It's not, it can't be anywhere near as large as Far Harbor.
I don't know. I guess Solstheim was bigger or just as big. Mm. But, because, I mean, I haven't finished Solstheim at all. there's still stuff in Skyrim I didn't really complete, but I guess, I don't know, I've moved on to other games now.
Yeah, I wonder if I'll ever get back to Skyrim.
Maybe.
If I'll ever get back.
Oh, I don't know. I will say this. Expressed, you're being done with open world magic.
I didn't say I was done because I did enjoy Fallout 4, the main storyline, but, you know, here's the thing. I'm not compelled to play it again. That's a problem. I mean, Fallout 3, I played again and again and again, you know. Fallout 4, enjoyed the story. I liked my interpretation of the single player, single storyline, and that's it. So, TJ, you were going to say?
I was going to say, I don't know how far New Vegas... I don't know how far Fallout 4 goes into this. It didn't seem like much to me. But the thing I loved about New Vegas DLC was that it answered questions that were left in the main world. Like, Honest Hearts addressed what's the word for it? It addressed the mystique of the Burning Man. Like, that you hear about all the time, but you never see him. And Lonesome Road addressed what happened to that other courier. Why did he let you have the mission? Why did he take off? And I love that it built upon answering the questions that were left unanswered in the main world. And I don't know, does Fallout 4 do that with its DLC?
I would say not really. With Far Harbor, I think they tried to put a twist on things, but it had its own story that felt pretty independent of the mainland, depending on what factions.
That's sort of like what the DLC from Fallout 3 was. Now, keep in mind, Fallout 3 and Fallout 4 were Bethesda. Fallout New Vegas was Obsidian.
Mm-hmm.
So Obsidian loves to do what-ifs and whys, you know? I mean, Chris Avellan with Knights of the Old Republic 2, he saw every single Star Wars book and movie and all that stuff and deconstructed it. And he wasn't
I think Obsidian is probably the better story writer in this case.
And you definitely have, like, your self-contained stories in New Vegas DLC. Dead Money is definitely self-contained. And Old World Blues, it plays off of some idea in New Vegas, but it's also sort of self-contained. Whereas Lonesome Road and Honest Hearts are answering the questions that you would have after you finish that game.
I mean, with Bethesda, theirs are stories unto themselves, but there are also some twists and morality things, like the Pit, you know. The rebels are anti-slavery, but they're also absolute baby-murdering scum,
mm-hmm.
while the slavers in Pit are generous and well-thought-out and intelligent. So you have to make a real choice. Do I go with the intelligent, you know, slavers who aren't really slaving because they want power, but because they have a plan for the future? Or do you side with the abolitionist people who want to murder a baby to make sure, to become free?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's a real choice to be made there. Otherwise, you know, sometimes the Mothership Zeta was just a friggin' training program, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, sort of like Pinnacle Station in Mass Effect.
Wait, wasn't that which one was the one where you step into the simulation machine and you simulate the Battle of Alaska?
That might have been Was that Mothership Zeta?
I think that was the very first DLC that came out for Fallout 3.
Mothership Zeta. Because what happens is you find the spaceship with the aliens things in there, and then it tests you on your fighting skills.
It was Operation Anchorage.
Right. Anyway, it's like I said, it wasn't until Broken Steel that people thought anything well of the Broken Steel is what was the first good DLC, and basically because it took the thing. Oh, you know, we have this guy over here who's intelligent and is also immune to radiation. Why don't he deal with the water purifier fire instead of the two humans who will die in there?
Mm-hmm.
You know. And even Fox says, oh, you're right. You know, and before that DLC said, it is not my purpose to stray you from your destiny. And then when after the DLC is installed, oh, you're right. Let's have the guy who won't die if he goes in there go. Good thinking. I like the intelligent super mutants, the ones who aren't all crush, kill, and destroy. Although the companion in Fallout 4 is, why not kill it and why not eat it? He's not evil. He just doesn't mind killing and eating people.
Yeah.
But I like Fox, and there was the other guy too. I don't know if he was in Fallout 3 or Fallout 4, who is just wandering around, and when you meet him, you know, even if you hold him up, he gives you a dress or a nice suit. Says that's all I have. Enjoy it, and I don't mind if you're robbing me. Just remember my kindness. Poor guy.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, oh yeah, and that scientist who was cured of being a super mutant. Spoilers. Anyways, we're gonna move on to game news. EA strongly hints that Mass Effect games will be remastered. This comes from Game Informer. This console generation has become known for its plethora of remasters. Some, like The Last of Us and Grand Theft Auto V, have been solid updates to the last generation's brightest games. Others haven't fared as well, and both of you are going to start muttering about Skyrim under your breath, I know.
I was going to say Batman.
But I'm not... Well, the remaster? That wasn't... Batman Arkham Knight was a sequel.
Oh, yeah, that's...
It was the port that was bad, but I know you're both grumbling about the $60 Skyrim remaster.
Yeah. Anyway, well, I guess Skyrim needed a little bit of remastering, but some of these other games are just really new, it feels like, or at least newer than Skyrim, and yeah. I don't know. I'd like even older games to be remastered if we're going to remaster something. Make it like a significant update. Some of these are just like, it's so minute, these updates. I don't know.
Well, let me ask you a question. Hey, TJ, how welcome was the remaster of Dishonored?
It was... It's good, only because I get all of the DLC and everything in one package, right. And it was for a cheap price. It wasn't $60.
Well, it was $40?
It was like $30 to get everything. Mm.
Yeah, yeah, I got it for pretty cheap too. The Dishonored, because it was on sale, and that was a pretty good deal.
And that's the main game and the DLC and a little bit of a visual update all in one package.
Anyway, moving on to the article, Patrick Söderlund, executive vice president of EA Studios, spoke to press at E3 2015, emphasizing that the company was looking ahead to new projects instead of dipping into the back catalog for remasters. After a year, he sort of reversed his position, as EA is now strongly considering a move into the remaster space. Of all the publishers' games, the one that stands out as having the strongest demand from fans, Mass Effect. According to Söderlund, in this year's Gamescom, what's changed is proof in the market that people want it, maybe more than there was spoke. I'm going to say right now, as he prattles on about this and that, no, what you saw was how much people were enjoying Red Dead Redemption and buying it in backwards compatibility, and people were going after it and thinking, you know what, screw making it backwards compatible with Mass Effect 2 and 3. We're just going to remaster it for everybody.
This is what happens when you vote with your wallet. Now, and, you know.
Yeah, he does say that we have to be careful in choosing the right brands for the right reasons at the right time. A remaster is something that you can just do or do it really well. I want to make sure that if we were to do it, we would do it really well, and that people feel it's the same game, but feels so much better in the new shape and form. So, this, what I'm hoping he's saying is that there'll be some minor stuff added. Like, here's one thing I would love for them to do. Allow you to do your love interest in the final mission, no matter who it was. Like, if your love interest was Jack, allow her to fight with you in the final mission. I mean, what happens in the final mission is that they're running, what's it called? They're running and running and running towards the thing, and it gets blown up, and, well, first you have to fight the Banshees, you know. But then when you're running there, they have to get picked up on a ship, and either they die or they don't die, depending on you know, your level. I would like it, say, if you were Romance Jack, that she fights alongside you at the end. Mm-hmm. Because you can fight with Garrus, you can fight alongside Garrus, you can fight alongside Tal, you can fight alongside Caden or Ashley or Liara, but you can't fight alongside, say, Miranda, and you can't fight alongside Jack. You know, it would be silly to fight alongside Thane because he's dead. But, you know, it would be nice to have that little thing so that you could spend that one last minute with him. Or, heck, allow you to fight alongside Rex, even if he's not a romance. Wouldn't it be cool to fight, have Rex with you when you're going down there? Or Grunt? Have both Krogans with you. Because when you're fighting a Reaper, do you want puny humans accompanying you, or do you want two big, bulky, alpha male Krogans side by side with you?
And you spend so much time with Rex in the first and second game, like, just becoming comrades in arms. And it doesn't make sense that you wouldn't be able to have that in the...
Well, you do in 3 with the Citadel DLC, he finally fights with you again. And what's great about that is that if you bring him with another character, he'll banter with them and talk to them. Like, if he's with Tali, he'll start pestering her about how to keep her shotgun, you know, ready, you know, and she tells him he's like the big, big crazy uncle that she never had. And if you're with either Ashley or Caden, he'll bring up the fact that he talked to them about who would win, them or Shepard in a fight, you know? And he's gleeful because you'll finally get to have your chance! So, yeah, I mean, I'd love to see more dialogue. I mean, obviously you can't have more dialogue with Zaid since the actor died, but you can reuse dialogue since you'll probably just have combat dialogue, so...
Yeah. I think what I'm reading here is that especially he puts a lot of emphasis on timing. I think if these remasters are going to happen, they're probably going to happen maybe 3 months before Andromeda comes out.
I'd say 6 months. There's also something else you have to understand about Mass Effect 3. It's still making a crap ton of money in the multiplayer, and people still love the multiplayer, which, by the way, shocked me and shocked a lot of people. But they did a good... BioWare, give them credit here, they did a great job with the multiplayer.
Yeah, they did.
You know? I mean, you got to fight as a Volus. You got to fight as a biotic god Volus.
That, and they made it matter to the single-player game, which I thought was kind of impressive.
It didn't really matter to me, because I would regularly get so high in EMS in the single-player that if it was 50%, you know, didn't matter. Especially with the Leviathan DLC. That just added 800 EMS points, and it's like, yeah... But it did have a matter if you wanted to speed run the single player game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you know what I would love to see? A way, if you get your EMS high enough, ridiculously high, like 8,000, you could do the refuse ending and win.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the army that they built up, if you did everything perfectly, the Quarians, the Geth, the Krogans, the Turians, the Rachni, for crying out loud, you know, all of these races fighting together, if you had a high, I would have a 7,400 EMS, and if I picked Refuse, they would still lose. I would like to see it if you really got a ridiculously high EMS, and yet maybe toss in the multiplayer somehow, you know, like you'd have to get 9,000, whatever. Make it so that you could actually win the Refuse. Or you could really be devious and have, say, you have to have a 7,000 EMS, but also not be Paragon and not be Renegade. You have to be middle of the road Shepherd. That would be extremely tough.
Yeah, and like, that would be worthwhile, because you don't really get anything for being middle ground in BioWare games.
No, I mean, at least in this one, you had... In Mass Effect 3, at least you had Rep, which was independent of Paragon or Renegade, you know?
I would go as far as to say you get penalized for being neutral in BioWare games.
I was about to bring up Fallout 3, but that's not BioWare. At BioWare, they actually acknowledged you when you were neutral, and they gave you special perks when you were neutral.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see what Andromeda does with that. I mean... Maybe it won't be bound to Paragon or Renegade anymore, and they'll go the Dragon Age route, in which there is no morality. It's just the decisions you make.
Yeah. I remember playing Jade Empire, another BioWare game.
Yeah, the closed fist was evil, and it wasn't supposed to be.
and Open Fist is good. But if you go through the, but if you go Middle Ground, which I wanted to, I didn't like. No, you can.
I don't think it was Good and Evil. I think it was Order and Chaos. No.
See, with open hand and closed fist, the closed fist philosophy was supposed to be, you have to do it on your own. You don't get any help. It's all about your strength and being able to overcome obstacles without needing anybody else. Right? I mean, with a slave girl, there were three options. One closed fist was you kill all the slavers and let her go. But the true open closed fist one was that you gave her a knife and said, here, fight your way out. Show that you deserve to be free.
Uh-huh.
And that was supposed to be the philosophy of closed fist. Except they made it so that closed fist was essentially being a dick for most of the game. You know, and that...
I didn't want to do that all the time. I didn't want to be good all the time, but I didn't want to be evil all the time. And then I found out way too late that by not doing that, by not choosing one path and sticking to it, you lose out on getting the best techniques of either side.
Yeah.
Which was a supreme bite to me and made me hate the game.
You know, BioWare keeps on teasing Jade Empire 2. I just wish they would just do it already.
Yeah, I think in the East, they don't really have this concept of good and evil like we do, but they do have order versus chaos, and that's I know they show that in Suikoden series, so I didn't realize they messed it up so bad in Jade Empire.
Although the ultimate closed fist ending in Jade Empire was that you killed everybody and you took control of the water dragon, you became a god.
Yeah.
Then there was the you are an idiot ending in which you decided to say to Sun Li, oh, you know what, okay, you can kill me and I'll be a legend, and he just kills you. And you act like it's like the Quajian ending of Vampire the Masquerade, in which you side with the Eastern vampires, and what your reward is being locked in a catacomb and tossed in the sea, forever bound underneath the waves. And since you can't die as a vampire, you just go nuts.
Yeah, what I got from BioWare games is that if you're neutral or middle of the road in any ways, you're an idiot. You don't deserve anything cool. Mm.
But on the other hand, I always had this urge to be the good person, especially in Dragon Age, because Dragon Age is such a dark, depressing, place that being the sole light in darkness sort of has an appeal to me.
Yeah.
Well, I know what Scott's thinking. I mean, he's thinking about Tyranny now, aren't you? And thinking about how that's going to work.
Actually, it's going to be coming out pretty soon.
We're going to have to find out how that morality works.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really want to see, like, how far I can push it, what I can do, and I almost want to see if I could just totally, like, undo this evil villain's victory or not. I mean, I would like that to be an option. I mean, it would have to be a hard one, you know, you'd have to play your cards exactly
right. I think the best you can do, I'm willing to bet you the best you can do is usurp him, and then rule things your way.
Well, and not necessarily good. They've made it quite clear that if you act too good, they'll straight up kill your ass.
Yeah. It reminds me of Mafia 3, in which if you keep ignoring one of your lieutenants, they'll turn on your ass, and you'll be forced to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't like the characters, and I hope they're not the slime that they show in because I, you know... One thing I really like about Red Dead Redemption is that you could potentially play John Marston as a fucking asshole in every single way of the word, especially given his background of being a vicious gang member. But in Red Dead Redemption, you could actually have him playing as good as he possibly can be. You know, it doesn't work. It doesn't really work in the end that he's never able to escape it, but he tries.
Yeah.
And Jordan Lund said he liked that about Red Dead Redemption because he didn't like playing in Grand Theft Auto because you were playing a gangster and a mobster and you're an asshole and all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I do like Marsters in Red Dead Redemption because I felt like he was trying to be a good person.
Well, and you could play him as trying to be a good person.
That you could never sleep with the prostitute, even if you wanted to. It was just like a nope, this isn't happening.
He has his own prostitute that he married.
I just thought it was touching that he was loyal to his wife.
Yeah. and that she was a terrible cook, and he still stayed with her. By the way, the thing about Marston is that, yeah, he's faithful to his wife, but he could be a complete and utter demon, you know, and justify everything that that the FBI guy felt about him, that he was unrepentant.
I mean, it's telling that there's a achievement in the game for pulling off a Dick Dastardly where you
yeah,
tie
where
someone
you
up and leave them on train tracks.
Yeah, I did that.
Yeah, that was kind of fun to do. You just tie someone up, yeah. Check them on the train track, and watch them get nailed.
I just wish there was the fast piano music that plays when you do it.
You know, that reminds me, by the way, about games that are coming out next week. And there's a board game I'm really interested in that's coming out next week, and that's Pandemic Cthulhu.
Oh, yeah?
They're making a Cthulhu version of Pandemic.
Oh.
And it actually has some slightly different gameplay mechanics. I mean, it's generally you're trying to stop, you know, a plague, but in this case, you're trying to stop the cultists from spreading their insanity around Massachusetts.
Mm.
But there'll be different types of gods, just like in Elder Sign, in which you, okay, this time it's Cthulhu, this time it's Haster, you know, that sort of stuff. I don't know why I brought that up, but you know, I just realized I was thinking about next week. So yeah, I mean, it's disappointing that I won't be able to get the backwards compatibility because I have all the DLC. I'm hoping that the remastered edition has all the DLC. Because here's the thing. If you buy the Mass Effect trilogy, either on Origin or wherever else, all you get are all the DLC for the first game, one DLC for the second game, and that's it.
That's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. So I'm willing to bet you that the Mass Effect remastered will be all three games, $60, but it'll also include all the DLC, and I would buy that in a heartbeat.
That is, yeah, that's a worthwhile package.
Because it's three games, A. Hey, you know what? I'd spend $70 for that. You know, I wouldn't go that way.
Heck, all of the DLC in Mass Effect 2 is well worth the price of admission, because that DLC was pretty freaking great.
And three. I mean, well, I mean, there was one DLC in 2 that was eh. And that was the one in which, No, that was in the first one. That was Pinnacle Station.
The Shadow Broker is easily my favorite DLC in 2. I also really liked the one where you go
Overlord?
And fight the rogue AI.
Project Overlord.
Yeah, that one was great.
Here's the thing. Play it after you defeat everybody and bring Legion with you, because there's special dialogue if Legion's with you.
Oh, I did. That was, yeah, you're
and
right.
The thing is that Dr. Gavin says, oh, you know, everything we did here was a waste of time. All you had to do to get in league with the Geth was ask. How about I really like the Arrival too.
Yeah.
And especially if you do it again after you finish the collector base. If you do it before, you have no idea who Harbinger is. After the collector base, you know who Harbinger is, and the dialogue's different. And I love that about the Mass Effect games, that everything fits in neatly. Like, here's the thing. If you play Mass Effect 3 and you never did the Shadow Brokers thing, Liara still becomes the Shadow Broker, but she talks about how she had to have a troop of soldiers, of highly advanced soldiers, try and take the Shadow Broker base, and they all got killed, and her best friend got killed. It's a lot of, for want of a nail, if you're not there. You know? Mm-hmm. Same thing with the other ones, you know, like if you never did Project Overlord, they had to nuke the site from orbit.
Oh.
They had to nuke the site from orbit.
Oh my goodness. I never played Mass Effect 3 without porting my data, so.
Well, here's I did an old save file with Mass Effect 3 once, and that's what happens. You get all the default stuff.
I really do like porting old save data from games. It gives you like a real sense of accomplishment that you completed the previous game, and then you could see the results of that in the next one, and that is very clear in the Trials in the Sky game, where they make constant references to the little side missions that you've done and the characters you've met.
And that's why I hate Dragon Keep so much, which is the porting thing for Dragon Age Inquisition. The reason being is that with the Mass Effect games, they know every single thing that you did. For example, if you spared Fist, he appears in Omega later. And you know, that's not something that's in the porting things, you know, because both Mass Effect 2 and Mass Effect 3 have the optional comics that you can play to start to create a save file, but they don't count for Fist. They don't count for Helena Blake, you know, and whatever you do with her, you know. Mm-hmm. In Dragon Age Inquisition, the little things that I did, never acknowledged.
Mm.
You know? And I guess that's... But the little things I did in... Well, I mean, the ports in Mass Effect from Dragon Age 1 to 2... There's some stuff, but Mass Effect, yeah, it's one big bundle of a thing, and you're gonna have to port your save data. Well, you'll have general save data for Mass Effect Andromeda because it'll probably just say, "Was your Shepard male or female?"
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. I think that's all they really need to know.
That's like the KOTOR one.
Yeah, he asks whether he was male or female, and then we either they're light or dark, and that was it.
Yeah.
You know, what was the lightsaber and stuff like that? But in the trials, if you get like the maximum bonus points, you get a special item. Actually, you get a couple special items in the next game, so it's worth it, I think, to do that.
Hmm. Okay, so we're gonna move on to the next time. I'll just do all these news items because we're very talkative today. So, No Man's Sky PC patch is out now, and this comes from some PC Gamer. It's still without patch notes, but that might not be true by now. This is from today, but, you know. But the PC version of the No Man's Sky 1.04 patch is now live. The patch, which went into testing earlier this week, aims to address the game's launch issues, which included poor performance, stuttering FPS drops, and screen tearing for some players. According to Hello Games head Sean Murray on Twitter, quote, "Even though one less than 1% of players have raised support issues, we're going to resolve roughly 70% of them this week. Patch notes incoming, but PC build adds support for more hardware, plus improves frame rate at slow spec, PS4 improves stability, and lots more." So here's the thing about No Man's Sky, and I knew this was going to happen. It was a disaster. The Metacritic, 1,300 people liked it. 1,300 people, even more, like 1,400 people hated it. It has a 5.0 in the Metacritic, and the PC version was particularly bad.
Yeah, I've heard about the game crashing and not loading, and then there's the actual issues of the gameplay itself. Some people feel it's very monotonous. It doesn't give out that variety that they were expecting. I think they also thought that there was going to be multiplayer somehow, or that they would be able to share their experience with their friends, but you can't.
Yeah, I mean, Yahtzee did a, judging by the cover, and the cover he showed for No Man's Sky showed online support, online required on the box, you know, and they covered that up later, if I remember correctly, with a sticker. You see, they covered up a sticker and you pull it off and it says, oh, online in connectivity, you know, so it's, the main crime is that, A, it's supposed to be procedurally generated, but it's a very shallow procedural generation.
It all draws from the same box.
Yeah, and basically what it determines is basically how hot the planet is and how high or low the water level is going to be. And then it does the spore thing of just mixing and matching body parts on creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Which inevitably people found a penis planet. Because this is the internet and everything has to involve penises. So, yeah, this game... You could see this coming, though, because the gameplay was a lot... This isn't just another survival resource-gathering game like every other one that's been out there. And the hype that Sony gave it gave people way too much. And there's also the fact that it costs $60 frickin'.
Mm-hmm. That is way too much for this game.
And I have to wonder if it was Sony who demanded that price.
I have no idea.
I don't know if Hello Games would have offered it at $60.
Yeah, and I think I also read an article somewhere where the guy who made this was not going to do paid DLC, but now apparently he's kind of waffling on it, thinking that maybe he might have to. So
yeah.
That's not going to be good.
What's funny is Jim Sterling wrote a negative review, and he got not Jim Sterling. This guy, a couple of months ago, reported that the game was going to be delayed till August, and he got death threats.
Yeah.
2 months before. And then Sean Murray confirmed it, and then Sean Murray got death threats.
Jimquisition did do a review of it, and his site got doxxed for it.
Yeah, and he said he didn't care because he doesn't generate any income from the site, and he made a video just mocking them.
Which, those people are stupid. Get over yourself. Bad games happen.
These people who are doing this are worse than the Sony Defense Force. I mean, they are maniacal. And the thing is that it's a friggin' indie game that we're gonna forget about in 2 months. You know?
The only survival game I need is Minecraft.
It's not a survival game, that's a building game. Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, actually building, crafting, that sort of thing, and occasionally having to deal with you know, that reminds me of that Unreal Engine 4 game, Fortnite. I'm still waiting for that, and they're still developing it, and it looks really, really cool. You know, it's basically Minecraft, except it's it's not all about building, just barricading and dealing with the night thing. So it's basically all about the night version of Minecraft. It looks really
kind of almost sounds like Starve. We get to survive and during the night and
yeah, and you build day, you build, but during day you build stuff and you make traps and all that stuff. Yeah,
right.
So I'm still looking forward to that, even though it's, what, 4 years since they last announced it? Maybe five?
Yeah.
Something like that. Something ridiculous like that. So.
Well, I'll give you my take on No Man's Sky, because I've been waiting for this one.
You know what's funny is Zero Punctuation call it Nomansky. Nomansky!
I was ready for this game. I was one of the people that was really interested in what it was going to be and how it was going to play out, and...
This is why we wait for reviews for the most part, you know?
My review was,
C+ or B-. Like every other.
It was a 6.0 out of 10.
Because most of them have been 7s, you know? It's sort of like,
I gave it a 6.0 out of 10. Because I like the visuals. The feeling of taking off from a planet for the first time and seeing the galaxy around you as it comes into view as you break the atmosphere brought a tear to my eye. I really enjoyed that feeling. It was so cool.
Here's the parallel, though. I felt the same way with Spore. And I think No Man's Sky is Spore. And it's not even sort of like the same situation. They're almost the same type of game. I mean, they're both procedurally generated. I mean, here's the thing. They're both procedurally generated, but I will say this about Spore. It did procedural generation of planets a lot better than No Man's Sky did.
I would disagree, but that's different.
Wait, no. Have you seen the procedural generation of the planets on Spore, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, they're very basic and very boring.
But they're even more interesting than No Man's Sky, though. See, that's the problem.
I don't think so. There's definitely, I'll say this about No Man's Sky. Every planet that you go to and get out of your ship, if you're looking for civilization, it all plays out the very same. The story in No Man's Sky is...
You have to go to the center of the galaxy. Boing. It's the same plot as Star Trek
V. Hold on. the story of No Man's Sky when... And I'm not talking about Atlas. That's a thing in of itself. But the story outside of Atlas... when you go to planets, is as procedurally generated as everything else there. But what that is it draws from a series of scenarios, and you answer them in basically the same way, like simple riddles. What that game really excels in is not going to civilization, just getting out of your ship and going and running across the planet and seeing what you find. It's a safari. And
you know what people really love about Elite Dangerous is the exploration. You know what I would love to see? I would see NASA actually has software that allows them to procedurally generate planets. Mm-hmm. And what I would love to see is just a game in which you explore. You know,
yeah,
no NASA trading, no crafting.
Exploring game, that would be awesome.
Just a game that has really sophisticated planet generation. I mean, really sophisticated. And you go out, and your job is to map these planets and see what makes them unique.
Yeah, that would be awesome. If anyone could do it, NASA could. That would be
Well, not even NASA. I mean, just someone, you know... I mean, like, if you go to Gliese, you know, and you go to one of the planets, oh, it's actually an ocean planet after all. And you get to go on the surface and document a lot of stuff, you know. The wildlife would be difficult to do, but I just want a game in which... See, the thing is, I'm really into exoplanets and all that, so mm-hmm. I just want to have that exploration game.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, the funnest time I had with No Man's Sky was getting out of the ship, walking around the planet, seeing what I could find on it, and only returning to civilization when I absolutely have to, which is when my inventory is full, which happens a lot.
There was a player that played, like, he maxed out his ship and inventory and everything by staying on his own planet. He never left that planet. He stayed on that one planet and I guess found the cargo drops and some trader ships or whatever to get whatever else he needed.
Yeah, and I thought that exploration aspect was fun. What bogged the game down the most for me was the constant chores, the video game chores. I've talked about this before.
Oh, one of the problems with that game was that some people have a version of the game in which they'll see upgrades that are not available.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, oh, you can get this shovel, level 3, but I don't have your level shovel, level 2, 1, and can't get it. You know, that sort of thing.
You know, there's equipment that's better than earlier equipment, but there's really not equipment that relies on having other equipment to have.
Oh, that's right. There's another thing we're completely ignoring, and I'll let you get into your thing, TJ, but this is too big. One other thing about this game is that the game that's on the disc and the game that, what's it called, that you download or whatever, is not the game that you patch after it's patched. It's a completely different game, because 6 months ago, they found out that the game that they were making, No Man's Sky, the one they were making, was horribly, horribly, horribly boring and not very fun to play and all that. And everything that you're seeing here is a completely new game that they patched in. So the game that's on the disc is not the game that you're playing if you bought it on disc. Let me put it that way. So if you don't have an internet connection and it doesn't update, you're playing a completely different game than everybody else is playing.
I kind of wish I had a PS4 in offline mode now. I guess I could just disconnect it from the internet.
Do you have a PS4, TJ?
I do.
Okay.
I'm just saying, you could look this up. Everybody, if you want, do Google search No Man's Sky original version, and it's fascinating. This game that you're playing, the reason why it feels broken and buggy and all that stuff is because it's a beta. And that baffles me, by the way. If you're going to do this, why not just release it early access? Then people will be a lot more forgiving. Say, oh, well, it's not a finished game. It's an early access.
Yeah, that makes me curious of what would happen if I deleted all my files, put my PS4 in offline mode, and then played the game just straight off the disc. But what I was saying, though, is that the worst thing that game does, for me, is because I'm so interested in exploring and I'm so interested in seeing what a planet has to offer, even if it's variations of similar things I've seen before. Discovering those things is enjoyable. What's not enjoyable is my stupid AI suit telling me every 5 minutes, your life support is running low. And then me having to go around and harvest regular minerals. The resource sink in that game is like if you had to drink water and then immediately 5 minutes later you had to pee, and then you had to drink more water immediately or you'd get dehydrated.
Yeah, that's what people felt in System Shock 2 with the weapon degradation.
And that is, in a game that wants you to be free and explore everything, barraging you with constant chores that you have to do in order to either keep moving or not die is such a fucking drag on the joy of it all.
You know, what that tells me is that they didn't think there was enough game in the game.
Yeah, and I've talked about it before. It's the reason I won't play Stardew Valley, and it's the reason I won't play Minecraft, is because I'm not interested in doing video game chores. If you're selling me a game that you're talking about exploration and discovering things in the galaxy, then let me explore. Don't bog me down with bullshit like...
EJ,
the difference in Minecraft, though, is the entire point is that you're collecting resources and using them and building them. That's the entire game. It isn't that it's repetitive.
You don't have to do the survival stuff. You can go into
creative
mode or peaceful mode, and you won't have hunger or have to worry about feeding yourself.
Yeah.
And I know the tools break, but you can get mending enchantments, which lets experience rebuild your tools and whatnot. It's really not that bad. At least not as bad as No Man's Sky. Yeah, the point of Minecraft is to build stuff if you want to.
Yeah.
I think here's the thing. Minecraft is to build stuff. No Man's Sky was position, and a lot of it is exploration. So when you have these stuff that's the this equivalent of, like I said, System Shock 2, of your weapons constantly breaking, you know, that's going against of what the mission statement of the game is. The mission statement of the game, if you look at the fucking box, is explore new worlds.
Yeah, the mission statement of the actual game is make sure that you drink, make sure that you get enough plutonium to restore your suit, or else you're going to die. And that happens all the fucking time. I am sick of hearing my stupid AI voice go, "Life support low, restore."
Yeah, if you've listened to Angry Joe, he did that similar thing where he's sitting there, he's mining out. He's like, "Oh, you're." Tool is overheated and you have to repair it. And he starts mining again. And all of a sudden, says your suit is low on that. You have to mine this. And he starts mining that. And
it is everything. It is your gun. It is your ship. It is your suit. It is everything. Just like, always chores.
Like I said, you're actually playing an unfinished game because they found that the original game wasn't fun. And the thing that makes me wonder is, what the hell do you think you were working on for 3 years before you decided you had to redo the entire game? You know who also redid their game when they realized that it wasn't keeping up? Duke Nukem Forever. How well did that happen? You know?
I'll say this.
What there they should have... Here's the thing. Had they done No Man's Sky from the very start, early access, you know, after a year of development, they have something working. If they bring people in, those people are going to tell them, "You got to change this," and they won't waste their time. But I'm willing to bet you Sony said, "No, we have to have this be one big surprise." You know, marketing told them, no information. Because here's the other thing about No Man's Sky. There was almost no information about that game, aside from a video.
Mm-hmm.
Almost no information was doled out about the game. Even at E3... they gave you, like, 2 bits of information and a little bit of a vertical slice to play. You weren't allowed to play it. You only had a few videos. They built up a mystique about the game, but the thing is that, you know, they should have sacrificed the mystique to make a good game. And this is where the rare case in which I say Steam Early Access is a good idea. You know?
Steam Access... if you're a PC player playing No Man's Sky, I'm going to give you a fast track. There's a mod out there that allows you to... replenish the resources on your suit, or actually it allows you to replenish the resources on everything that you have without having that resource. Go download that mod if you don't feel like listening to your stupid AI talk to you for hours on end.
Or just don't buy No Man's Sky and wait. That's the benefit of PC gaming, is that if you wait, you'll get the full version of No Man's Sky in 2 years for $10. Assuming that they're able to, because here's the thing that's really infuriating me. They're working on DLC. They're working on DLC and their game isn't finished. What the fuck?
Yeah. And I'll say, there are good things to that game. I love the exploration aspect.
It's one of those games in which you say, there's a good game inside there waiting to come out.
Yes.
You know?
It is definitely that. And, I mean, there's a good game that's even there, but it's bogged down by so much crap sitting on top of it.
Here's the thing that people should do, and a lot of the smartest, like Sid Meier, knows this intensely. You figure out what's fun in a game, and you make that the game.
Yeah.
It's so simple. You take the fun part of a game and make that the game. What is that? Is that so hard to understand?
you know? Apparently it is.
This is definitely a case of they had a fun thing set up, and then they laid some stupid systems on top of it.
Also, people don't know about Sid Meier is that he makes hundreds of games a year, but he discards most of them because they're not fun. One of the hyped games that he started making and he eventually dropped was Sid Meier's Dinosaurs, and he dropped it because it wasn't working.
Oh, I remember what I was going to say. Also, if you want to play a No Man's Sky experience that's actually pretty fun, go check out Starbound. Starbound is also made by Chucklefish, the people who made Stardew Valley. It's basically a 2D version of what they were going for in No Man's Sky, and it's fun. It's an enjoyable ride.
Yeah, there was also another game. I'm trying to remember. It was... Oh, Planet Nomads is another game, and what's funny is they've been working on that for a long time, and they accused it of being a No Man's Sky ripoff, but it's actually coming out next week.
Yeah.
Planet Nomads. So it'll be very interesting to see how Planet Nomads compares to No Man's Sky, because they have a lot of the same aesthetic.
Yeah. You know, when I really think about it, Starbound has all of the things that No Man's Sky is missing, and addresses a lot of those problems.
There was a...
You do have, like, hunger and thirst, but they only come up, like, once a day or something. You do have to mine for resources, but it's your journey to take, and you don't have to do it to survive.
There was a science fiction survival game that came out either early this year or last year, which was... You were on this planet, which was basically like Mars. It may have been Mars. And you're trying to survive. And that's a game that's worth looking at. And I'm trying to remember what it's called. Shoot.
Oh, and you can play multiplayer in Starbound with other people if you get them on a server.
What's that? Multiplayer? Multiplayer? Yeah. That exists?
Yes, it exists in a survival game. Crazy, huh?
Maybe it was Tharsis. I'm not sure it was Tharsis that play, but I know there was something else. Anyway, but yeah, the thing about No Man's Sky is that people were acting like it was a unique concept, but it's hardly a unique concept. The hype machine built up so much for that game, and you know what? Maybe 10 years from now, we're gonna get the full story about No Man's Sky and Sony and what Sony instructed Hello Games to do. It's gonna be a great book, whatever that book is.
Yeah.
Because I'm pretty sure Sean Murray's gonna make a tell-all, and it's gonna be a great read. And then you'll learn about all things that No Man's Sky could have been, but someone told him, no, you can't do that, it's not fun.
Yeah.
Which is ridiculous. Anyways, we're done talking about No Man's Sky. I'm pretty sure there's going to be plenty of news about that for the next couple of weeks, too. It's just one of those games. And I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I knew that game was never going to live up to the hype. And the early things I heard about was it was kind of dull and boring, and, you know, and that, you know, it doesn't surprise me that they changed the entire game, and what you're playing right now is a beta of a game. But,
it makes some sense, actually, that that's what that is. And kind of sad, too, that they took this long to figure out they were making a boring game, and it just seems really clustery.
You know,
the worst crime that game commits isn't that it allows you to do stuff so freely. It's that it puts in so many repetitive tasks that take away from its core concept.
And charges you $60 for it. See, I you know, I don't want to get into pricing of games, but that is not a $60 game. That is not a $60. Remember way back when Penny Arcade Adventures was announced for Xbox Live Arcade, and people had a heart attack when it was $20. How dare you sell this RPG for $20?
Mm-hmm.
And I played it, and it was worth $20. You know, and I played the second one, and it was worth the $20. You know, I mean, I'm not against paying money for a game, you know. But the original concept of the game and the scope of the game, even if it was the best, even if it did what it was set out to do, not a $60 game. Because we've seen that kind of game. We've seen that kind of game done well. It's a $30 game. Not because so would it be. And what really irritates me are other indie developers rallying around No Man's Sky. Like, for some reason, them being an indie company should exclude them from criticism? No.
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 No, it doesn't.
No. It does not prevent... I don't care if it's 2 people on a game or 200 people on a game. You know, you're going to get criticized if it's crap. Or if it's... Yeah. Not even if it's crap, if it's disappointing and overpriced. And maybe they're rallying around them because they want indie games that are $60. And yeah, you can have that. You can have a $60 indie game. Just make it feel... I'll tell you something. Pillars of Eternity, I think if you buy it on Steam, what is it, $40,
$50?
I think it's about 35 now.
Right, 35. It's a $60 game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, No Man's Sky, not a $60 game. And it's sort of like the definition of pornography, you know. I know it when I see it.
So. Yeah.
Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. NPD, 3DS, Xbox One, and Grand Theft Auto 5 lead a brutal July slump. And this comes to us from Game Informer. The NPD report for July is finally available, completing the picture that started coming into focus a couple of weeks ago. We already know that the Xbox One led console sales, although I will say Xbox One S probably, with the 3DS beating it by selling more units and topping the handheld category. July wasn't a great month in the United States, with slumps across spending categories, total sales dropped by 14%, and hardware dropping heavily by 30%. Monster Hunter Generations was a driving force for Nintendo, as was Capcom's latest entry, as Capcom's latest entry propelled the 3DS to the lead. Software was down overall with no major console releases. Last year saw Batman Arkham Knight push strong numbers. Yeah, I'm pretty sure most of them were pre-order numbers. The top 10 best-selling titles for the month was Grand Theft Auto V, first, Overwatch, Lego Star Wars The Force Awakens, Monster Hunter Generations, and Call of Duty Black Ops 3. So, note that the NPD report includes new physical retail games and select digital sales in the United States. Of note, Overwatch was a strong second, despite Battle.net sales not being included. So, let's start with the Xbox One S, and I was actually pretty surprised that the Xbox One S would sell out. Because, here's the thing, you still have Project Scorpio a year away from now. And you had to wonder if people were going to shell out money for the Xbox One S.
Yeah.
You know? I'm pretty sure a lot of them took advantage of where they got $125 by trading in their Xbox One to get an upgrade. But the Xbox One S 2TB is still $400.
Yeah.
So go ahead, one of you.
That's I was always going to stay away from the Xbox One S for that reason, because I don't have anything to trade towards it.
And if you're going to get a Microsoft console, you might as well wait until Scorpio.
Exactly. Mm. Like, if there's going to be one that can do so many different things so much better, then why I don't have a 4K TV, so that sales rift is not something that's going to catch my attention.
Oh, come on. Get into the 21st century. You got to get yourself a 4K TV. I will say this, though. I'm not going to get a 4K monitor, but I do own a 4K TV.
I will get a 4K TV when I start making more money as a freelancer. Mm.
Well, here's the thing. You know, you're going to have 40-inch 4K TVs for $300 by this time next year. I'm guaranteeing it. $300 4K TVs. So you're not going to have to make as much money. They're gonna come down in price, and hell, you know, I'm wondering if someone's gonna bundle a Scorpio with a 4K TV.
Yeah, that wouldn't be a bad idea at all. But I was interested to see that at the very bottom of that list, Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege made it.
Yeah.
The DLC
and
just.
Here's the thing, that game was off the top 10 for a while, and yeah, it came back.
I will say that it's probably the DLC that just came out for it, but also, I don't know, because I don't know how much people buy into a game just based off of DLC coming out.
Mm. What surprises me is that Grand Theft Auto V was topping that list. I know that Overwatch probably beat it, but even if the remaster, you know, that's an old game.
The big draw for Grand Theft Auto V is the online component.
Yeah, I get Grand Theft Auto Online. I guess, but still, you know, even if it's... Even though I'm pretty sure that this version is for the Xbox One /PS4 version. Mm-hmm. You know, it's still an old game, you know. I wonder if there's a price drop. Maybe if it's $20 someplace now.
Yeah.
So, have you been playing Overwatch?
I haven't recently. I think I dropped off a little before Anna came out, and Anna wasn't really all that compelling of a character to me. I will probably pick it up because they just released a new map for it that's very cool. It's some crazy long German name.
Yeah. So Scott,
Eichenwald, and
okay.
Eichenwald is a German-based map centered... It's like a small German town centered around a giant medieval castle. Mm. and there's all sorts of stuff around the map. Like, you see dead robots that look like Bastion all over the place, and there's a guy in a throne room on the throne that's very clearly wearing Reinhardt's armor. So there's so much lore in
when
that.
You say
one
there's
map.
There's robots looking like Bastion all over the place. I'm thinking about Bastion, the game.
Oh no, not quite. Yeah. I'm talking about that turret robot that everybody hates.
So Scott, Minecraft is still holding in there on 6th. You know, and I'm willing to bet you a lot of that is the Windows 10 version that Microsoft's been pushing.
Yeah, they have been pushing that a lot, updating computers even like against other people's will.
have you been playing which version of Minecraft have you been playing?
The Java one. I haven't played the Windows 10 one.
Okay. So for the 3DS, it's very interesting that it's still holding strong, but does anybody here care about Monster Hunter Generations?
I don't, but I know a lot of people who do. That game has a ridiculously huge following. I don't want to say Pokemon level, but I would say kind of close.
Well, it's the closest thing you're going to get to Pokemon without actually being Pokemon. You know, I mean, an upgraded version of Pokemon in which you actually get to do stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's like that idea of getting together with your friends and taking on giant dragons.
Which Scalebound wants to do.
Uh-huh.
We'll see if that works.
So I can see the hype behind Monster Hunter. I know why people like it, but I also hear it has a bit of a learning curve that I'm not interested in taking.
Yeah, and also Destiny, the Taken King. I have not got back into Destiny since it first launched. I stopped it around like 6 weeks after it launched, and I'm wondering at what point should I somehow get the expansion and try it again? Because people say that the game completely changed after the expansions.
Taken King addressed a lot of the problems that the early game had, from what I heard.
Including Peter Dinklage.
But if you're like me, I'm just not interested in doing the same missions over and over and over again.
No, that's the thing about me, is I haven't played the missions at all. At least none of the ones off the moon. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have got into The Division if I wanted to do that sort of game. And I'm wondering what The Division is like right now. Because here's the thing, you know, The Division and Destiny, they've been on the slide, while Rainbow Six Siege, it's been on the rise. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, you know, because when Rainbow Six Siege was first released, it was bad. It was just out and out bad. I'm surprised, you know, people were surprised it lasted past the 6 months, but, you know, Rainbow Six still has a name, and I guess this is what happens when the publisher and the developer are in constant contact with the fans and asking them what's wrong with the game and what's right with the game.
I'll say this. What gives Rainbow Six Siege an edge over a lot of its predecessors is that it was built from the ground up for competition, and people love to compete. It was just a matter of deciding. And when you have a game that's built for competition, you're going to listen to the players that are competing in the game and listen to what they want to do with it, or what they wish they could do with it. And that's kind of where its strength lies over a game like Rainbow Six Vegas, is that those were reliant upon stories, and you weren't really going to change the story or change how it played out.
Scott?
Yeah?
Any impressions from anything about the NPDs? Anything that catches your eye? Aside from Minecraft, we were just discussing
that.
Yeah.
No.
Well, let's talk to you about what do you think of the Xbox One S selling so well? Because, like we discussed before, it's kind of a surprise that people purchase the thing when it's an intermediary between two consoles.
Yeah. That is a surprise, because it's like when the next one comes, they'll be buying that one, and I guess your previous games will be once again not backwards compatible, and it just feels like...
Well, no, they're going to be all compatible. It's just that the Scorpio is going to be able to do things that the Xbox One S can't.
Right. And that just feels like you're playing on a computer, you know, just constantly upgrading your stuff. And, I mean, I got to say, even my current computer right now, which is 2 years old, I don't foresee having to give it an upgrade even when Civ 6 comes out. I'm I'm hedging my bets that I'll be able to play that without having to upgrade anything, because I didn't have to for Fallout 4, so I'm pretty sure this Civ 6 is less graphic demanding and won't require a upgrade of any kind.
I will say this, when I first got Civilization 2, my computer was well below the minimum system requirements, but I was still able to play it because apparently what was taking up all that memory and stuff were the 3D avatars, you know. Those,
oh, yeah.
And I just played Civ 2 without them.
That's what I did.
Just the board, and it played perfectly fine.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, it plays fine. You don't need the 3D avatars, but apparently they still want to go with them.
I mean, later on I was able to play with them because I upgraded my computer, but, you know, for a long time, for like a year, I played without them, and I was perfectly fine without them. I just had the, Civ board, hex grid, and that was it. Man, you know, that brings me back. Playing Civ 2 for the first time was like magic. Because you remember what Civ 1 was like. It was just ugly tiles. I mean, it was fun, but it was still just ugly tiles. And then Civ 2 came out, and it was isometric, and it looked beautiful. With or without those holographic characters.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, so we did have mail this week. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. This is from Donovan. I like the auction house in Diablo 3 because it allowed for more gear homogenization. Yeah, homogenization. There we go. If my character got an item that did not help that specific class as much as another item, I could possibly auction that loot and buy a better suited one. The 6 T-flops teraflops on Scorpio made it comparable to a overclocked RX 480. So it might be capable of running Doom without dynamic resolution scaling, and consoles use low-level APIs similar to Vulkan, but don't have the CPU specifications.
Okay. So look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast, or the forums at Game... actually, there are no forums, so forget that. Send us your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
I am at Johnny Chugs.
And I am at Alpha Shark.
Right. So a little bit of a technical note here. We're going to start. We're going to start recording the podcast on Wednesdays, and this will be important for you guys who do write in, like Donovan did. So there will be a little bit of a longer lead time for writing in. Just a little note. And like I said, I couldn't get in contact with Paul today, but I hope he's having a fun birthday party. He's a Leo like me. And, yeah, maybe we'll have him on next week. We'll see.
That'd be nice.
Anyways, we will see you next week. And, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Take care, y'all.
And that's it.